Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Dave, Episode 127, the last of Season 8, as the Steelers get ready to report to training camp on Wednesday. Tomorrow, first official practice on Thursday. 8 seasons in the books.
47 days, 6 hours, 15 minutes, and 9 seconds until the Steelers open up their regular season against the Browns in Cleveland. Obviously, from this coming, Thursday, 2 weeks, it'll be, 2 weeks until the first preseason game. And, man, we don't have, this is the final weekend of this year that we won't have some sort of football, whether it be college or
is there a Hall of Fame? Is the Hall of Fame this weekend?
No, but the next weekend is, right?
Okay. Well, I saw somebody wrote some beat writer wrote that this is the last weekend. I was thinking this, we won't have. Anyway, I get the point.
No, yeah, this coming weekend will be our last weekend without football. So there is that. So a lot of good things happening. The Steelers obviously will report for training camp on Wednesday. Then we'll find out. Mike Tomlin, they'll have the conditioning test, and then Mike Tomlin will hold his annual inaugural training camp press conference, and we'll find out if there are any players on the PUP list that'll start on the active PUP list. I guess that's a good place to start, David. It's kind of a quick refresher course for everybody about how the active PUP list works, because there seems to be misconceptions thrown about on blogs and Twitter and whatnot once this thing gets underway here. But players need to be placed on the active PUP list before they practice. And players have to be on the active PUP list in order to qualify for the in-season reserve PUP list. So if a player is not placed on active PUP list at the start of camp and they practice and they get injured, they can't go back on the PUP. They can't be put on the PUP list at that point. So that's a very important part of this process. If a player is not placed on active PUP, then PUP for the regular season is out for them. And another clarification is once a player goes on active PUP, once he's taken off of that list and begins practicing, he cannot go back on it. And I think that's another misconception that's out there. Now, I don't think Mike Tomlin, during his tenure in Pittsburgh as the head coach, has ever had a training camp open without at least one player on the active PUP on the active PUP list. So, it's going to be interesting to see, which player or players it might be this year. I think it's a good bet that there'll probably be at least one. It seems like we always get some sort of surprise. If you go back to last year, it was Sammy Coates. And, boy, what a difference a year makes, right? We were talking about this time last year. Well, Sammy Coates, looking like he's going to, make the roster, going to have a battle with him and probably Justin Hunter, whatnot. Lo and behold, Sammy Coates starts the training camp on PUP, and by the start of the regular season, he's in Cleveland. So it just goes to show you what a difference a year makes. But Sammy Coates and Kanan Severin were the two players to start the 2017 training camp on active PUP. Kanan Severin didn't last too much longer, not long after he was activated. You know, he was waived outright, and we all know what happened to Sammy Coates moving forward. So I guess that's as good of starting place as any. And it'd be interesting to hear what Mike Tomlin has to say after the team reports on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, we didn't get a lot of news out of the OTAs in the mini camp, and, you know, things have gone according to plan in the off season. I mean, obviously the Le'Veon Bell news isn't shocking to any of us. You know, we didn't get the dreaded, all of a sudden out of the blue, somebody working out on their own, you know, tore their knee up or anything like that. So, yeah, you know, they come into this situation as we've talked about, and I know you and Alex have talked about the Terrell Edmunds situation, he's not signed. This is a non-event. It's 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning. We would expect to hear that he has, you know, signed, sealed, and delivered sometime in the next, probably in the next 24 hours. That gets done. As you said on Twitter, Dave, just trying to get the offset language in there, and the guys around them have signed. So no big deal. The Steelers should come into camp, and the biggest news when they come in is kind of, again, going to be, you know, who looks like what and what vehicles they come in.
Yeah, and I talked to Joel Corey about this again as well, too. You know, the only things really negotiable for Terrell Edmunds is the offset language and – these first round draft picks, usually a good portion of their entire 4-year rookie contract is guaranteed. So, there might be some negotiations going on about as far as how much of that of that fourth year is fully guaranteed. And
you know, I think the Pats, I think the first one was pick number 23 or whatever, and basically 99.1% of his contract, 4-year deal, is guaranteed. Now, why, you know, the team would actually even want to recoup whatever the minimal amount of money was, maybe it was $100,000 over the 4 years, I don't know, but you know, it gets into that level of detail in these discussions. So that's probably why it's taking the extra time.
Yeah, and then you had the Jaguars player Taven Bryan that people were wondering about what his offsets would be because of the way Jaguars have handled offsets with their previous first round picks. Now Joel Corey told me just the other day that since Bryan did sign, that he does have offsets now in his contracts. He does not know. The other thing that's kind of up for negotiation is the time period that the signing bonus payout is done in. So that's another thing that could possibly hold up things as well. But really, you know, these guys are – you know, it's not the signing bonus, the actual amount of signing bonus. It's not the total value of the contract that's holding things up. It's just these small negotiating points. And Edmunds is represented by CAA, and they still, most of the guys that remain unsigned right now are CAA clients. So you have to wonder how much that has to do with it as well, too. With Edmunds now being locked in, I mean, these last few guys at the bottom of the first round have gone pretty quick. You know, Taven Bryan, Sony Michel, Mike Hughes. I'm missing one in there as well too. That is signed, but you would think that there's not much wiggle room now with Edmunds. He's basically trapped in, and it now comes down to how much more his representation is probably asking for. And the Steelers in the past haven't been very forgiving. Haven't been very
willing to bend.
Willing to bend in situations such as this. So, if this does go on into, Wednesday, Thursday, it'll be kind of a little bit of uncharted territory for the Steelers when it comes to not having draft picks signed by the time, in quite a while, that is, that the Steelers haven't had draft picks signed. But, I'm with you. I will be a bit of a, it'll be a bit surprising if he isn't signed. And look, the start of training camp there, they're not in pads for a couple of days there. You still don't like these guys to miss, even though they took part in you know, all the off-season program. They should be up to speed on a lot of this stuff. You just hate to see these young guys miss any practice, whether it be to contract, whether it be to minor, you know, soft tissue injuries, any of that. So we'll sit and wait, and we'll see if Terrell Edmunds gets this deal done within the next, 24 hours.
Yeah, and my view on this, Dave, is it's incredibly important for the offensive linemen to be in there to work together. It's incredibly important for everybody on the defense to be in there to work together. It's good for the wide receivers and the tight ends to get the timing down with the quarterback when they're doing the route running and those types of things. The one guy who, honestly, I mean, it is the case, so it looks like I'm pointing this way to justify the story. The one guy who doesn't need to be there is Le'Veon Bell. I mean, really, if you're going to pick a player, you know, now look, if it was James Conner in his second year, obviously if it's any guy in his first year, the story's different. But a guy who's been in the system, and maybe you can say there's a slight difference now with a new offensive coordinator, you know, maybe the playbook is a little bit different. But, you know, my level of concern, and I understand people are like, well, he started off rusty last year. Look, we've seen Le'Veon Bell come back from injuries where he had similar type playoffs. And it was not a big deal. Last year, certainly the first three games, his numbers weren't good. So again, you know, we can debate whether that was because he wasn't at camp or not. But the one guy in terms of knowing the playbook, knowing what to do when his number is called, he is probably the least important. I'm not saying it's meaningless, but if you had to pick a guy, he'd probably be the guy in terms of all the guys in the starting 22.
I mean, obviously, you'd like him there, with Randy Feitner taking over, there shouldn't be too many, you know, there are going to be new wrinkles, and I'm sure, you know, once camp gets underway, Ben Roethlisberger will be asked about not having Le'Veon Bell, and he'll say, we obviously want him here, and, you know, there's some new wrinkles, you know, the same old stuff that we heard last year. I think the biggest thing is looking back and people wanting to talk about the quote-unquote, you know, maybe the rust that Le'Veon Bell had to start the regular season last year, and why the Steelers' running game probably wasn't up to snuff, and maybe some timing being off in the passing game. I believe there is a little bit to all that, but I mean, when you go back and look play by play, and I think we did this too through the first three or four games, you know, he didn't get a ton of carries in that opener, you know, against the Browns last year. He was sort of eased in. I mean, were there more blocking? How many times was he did he have company in the backfield? I think I went back and looked at a few of those posts from last year. How many times was it, you know, the offensive line not maybe being up to par, and the blocking assignments not being up to par in those first, let's say, three or four games there? And remember, they have lost Marcus Gilbert, you know, kind of what, that second game, right? About a quarter of the way through, and then you had Chris Hubbard in there at right tackle, and then, you know, you're missing Gilbert for a few more games there, and then McDonald, you know, missed a little bit of time, and yada yada. So how much of that, you know, it obviously all goes hand in hand, and yes, you'd like to have Le'Veon Bell be there as opposed to not be there, but am I overly concerned about him missing all training camp in the preseason? The short answer is no.
Okay, let's touch on this Eli Rogers thing, because I think that's been an interesting story, and I was relatively convinced that Eli Rogers would be under contract by now with the Steelers, and that he'd be coming to camp, and I think there's certainly a spot for him. You know, you look at the Steelers' depth chart, we've talked about it a lot in the offseason, and one of the reasons I wasn't overly concerned is I thought the Steelers and Eli Rogers would get something done, and he almost – to me, at least, assuming he's 100% healthy, he steps in as, you know, your fourth guy. I mean, he's a guy who can help you out immediately. There's a role for him. We've seen him. I realize again that he fumbled one punt against the Bears, but Eli Rogers has been a relatively sure-handed punt returner who's done some decent things. There's a spot for him. So I have to say, Dave, in the offseason predictions we make, I feel like we both did pretty well in all the things we thought were coming. This is one I've gotten wrong so far. What do you think the odds are now that Eli Rogers ends up a Steeler? Are they below 20%?
Well, I've had him up until now in my 53-man roster predictions. I've had him coming back.
You got to think that there's I'm a little surprised he's visiting teams and not being signed because it can't cost that much. I assume he's passing his physical, but that's obviously out there as at least a question mark. What do you think's happening?
I don't think he's worth what he thinks he's worth. The Steelers, here's an interesting question.
Well, what do you think he's worth? He can't be asking for $3 million. I mean,
I think he's worth the NFL minimum right now, coming off of a knee injury.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so let's say, $1 million or, a couple $100,000 here or there. I mean, I can't imagine it's a huge money issue.
Well, here's the thing. Would they have tendered him? Would they have restricted tendered him had he not suffered his knee injury?
I got to think absolutely.
Yeah. I would have thought they would have too, but we'll never.
Is there anybody they didn't tender that was, played it down? I mean,
seemed like I'll have to go back and look at that list. Seemed like there was a restricted free agent they may have didn't tender. I think Mike Matthews didn't play. He was injured. I had to go back and look at the list, David. But obviously the knee injury that Eli Rogers had suffered played a part in him not being restricted tendered. So then being as how he suffered his injury so late in the regular season, there's X amount of months you expect that to take, right? 8 months at minimum, right?
Yeah, I mean, you got your outliers like Terrell Suggs and Adrian Peterson, but let's say 8 months.
I mean, even 8 months for those guys was considered kind of quick. So here we are kind of at that point now. He supposedly visited the Chiefs already, left there without a deal. Next stop is reportedly with the Browns. We'll see what happens. I mean, if he can't land one with the Browns, where can he land a job, right? Because Todd Haley's over there. They just announced that Josh Gordon's going to start training camp on the non-football injury list. So not only should there be a spot right there on the training camp roster, he's got a guy that knows him, probably an offensive coordinator that probably knows him better than anybody in the league right now. If he can't land a spot there, where can he land one at?
Pittsburgh. I mean, it's not like the Steelers have look, they've got the elite of the elite, Antonio Brown. They've got Juju, who's been, who was, as good as you get as a rookie. You've got a second-round pick, but, after that, the cupboard's relatively bare.
Well, I theorize, I think Alex and I talked the other day about this. I theorize that he's already got one of those veteran minimum contracts in his hand from the Steelers, sign this and send it back whenever you're ready, kind of deal. Would you think that the Steelers have an offer more than that on the table? I mean, if so, then why wouldn't they have restricted tendered him?
Two different things. They didn't restrict they didn't give him the tender because you just never know if that knee injury is going to fully heal. I mean, you assume it is, but you had the option of not doing it, so they didn't have to do it. So you now got to see, 5 months later down the road to see what his, physical status is. So, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, maybe he does have something in his pocket from the Steelers, let's say $1 million. I don't know what the minimum would be for him at this point in his career, his third year, something like 800,000 or.
No, I don't even think it's that high, David.
So I don't know. I mean, maybe he's looking for a couple $100,000. I mean, for the Steelers, look, if the Steelers want the guy, it just seems odd to me. There's clearly an opening for him. I can't imagine Eli Rogers is out there pounding the table for $2 million or even $1.5 million. So again, if we're talking about $100,000 here or there, I'm a little surprised. But again, as you pointed out, he's already had a visit and he didn't get a contract. So he's going to have a second visit, or maybe he said, I'm not going to take that with Kansas City. I don't like the opportunity. So we'll see with Cleveland. So let's. I now don't have an opinion where he ends up. What do you think? Where do you think he ends up? I mean, do you think he ends up a Steeler or not?
Man, if he's got some of this interest out there, I mean, he hasn't signed yet. So, you know, with training camp about to start, maybe his best course of action, and I wrote this yesterday, you know, after the report came out that he left Kansas City unsigned and appeared to be headed for Oakland or Cleveland and then possibly Oakland after that. You know, if he can't get a deal now, maybe he's better served just sit out a little while, right, and wait for an injury around the league.
Yeah, I think that's a bad strategy, you know.
Let's say he did re-sign with the Steelers and did so at the minimum. What would you put his chances at making the final 53?
95%.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd put it at that high right now. Maybe around 70, 65 to 70%.
So more yes than no.
Yeah, because who would he be competing against? Marcus
Quadri Henderson's, I'm telling you, he's kind of my dark horse guy, and I don't. You know, that's the question is, can Quadri Henderson play receiver is obviously the question.
Yeah, but I would think that, Rodgers would have to contribute a little bit more than being just a receiver. But I think it would be kind of equal parts. He'd have to show that he could be, continue to be an equally competent, backup slot guy in addition to, helping out on special teams. I mean, was he really that great at either of those jobs, though?
Well, let's remember 2 years ago, he was second on the team in receptions with 50. I mean, he was second on the team behind Antonio Brown 2 years ago.
Yeah, but.
It was a playoff team. He caught 50 balls. I mean, it was a legit part of the offense.
Let me pull up some numbers here on this. I mean, I've always liked the kid. I thought he was a good route runner coming out of Louisville. It would have been interesting to see how his rookie season would have went had he not suffered that foot injury during training camp and needed surgery there. Yeah, I mean, look, it was Antonio Brown, 106 receptions, 75 for Bell, and then 48 for Rodgers. Obviously Martavis Bryant wasn't around. So, I mean,
who was next on that list? Jesse?
Jesse at 39. You know, you look back at that season and you look back and you say,
then you had all the guys with 15, right?
You had Coates at 21 behind Jesse James at 39. I mean, what does it tell you what does it tell you about the 2016 season when Le'Veon Bell was your second leading receiver? I mean, that's believable.
That's no surprise.
That's believable because of the type of back that he is.
Yeah, I mean, look, second last year too. So,
but that Eli Rogers was your third highest receiver with 48, and then Jesse James fourth, and then Coates 20. Heck, Ladarius Green, who played in what, 6 games, had 18, and he was tied with D'Angelo Williams. You know, Kobe Hamilton.
How many did Kobe have? Do you have 15?
17, and like 15 came on third downs, didn't they?
Yeah. Kobe Hamilton had some big catches that year. He had that touchdown catch in OT against the Browns right at the end of the season.
Right. Didn't he have another touchdown against the Dolphins on kind of the same play against the against the Browns, and then he had
how many DHB have? Did he have 10 that year?
No. DHB had 6. 6 for 114 and 2 touchdowns. DeMarcus Ayers had 6. Marcus Wheaton. Yeah, remember, I mean, Wheaton went down with, you know, didn't play a lot because of shoulder injury early in the season. And you didn't have Martavis Bryant. Heck, you know, remember the starting, remember the starting wide receivers in that championship game against the Patriots? Jeez.
Kobe?
Yeah, talk about Kobe and Brown and Coates and, well, Eli and, jeez. I mean, but back to Eli. I think he's just a tad overrated. I mean, I've carried him.
Who's overrating him? Nobody's overrating him. Maybe me, but nobody else is overrating him. Steeler fans don't love him. I don't know. Who's overrating him?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe I probably overrated him a tad just having him on my 53. But, you know, it's just, look, you have an unknown about Marcus Tucker. If you follow the buzz with Marcus Tucker right now, a lot of people are going to be disappointed if he doesn't make the 53 this year.
I know, but this is – I mean, it's silly, right? I mean, because there shouldn't be any buzz about Marcus Tucker. There shouldn't be any buzz. He's just a guy right now. I mean, there was more buzz about Justin Hunter 2 weeks into camp last year. I mean, we've seen this time and again with guys. And the reason there's buzz is because we don't know anything about him. You know, Eli Rogers has actually played in NFL games and done things. Marcus Tucker hasn't done anything.
Yeah, and then you have, I mean, what's after that? I mean, how excited are you about Justin Hunter and his prospects of possibly making a roster again?
I mean, I saw Justin Hunter last year. Look, I'm not saying he's worthless. That's not the point. But, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about him not being able to contribute on, or he hasn't contributed on special teams. I guess I shouldn't say he can't. I mean, you know, we didn't see James Harrison ever play special teams, and he went and did it with New England. So, you know, guys can do things. The Steelers haven't put him in that role. He hasn't been that guy, so we assume he can't do it. Who knows? But, you know, he wasn't dressing. Look, he's a big target, and that's, you know, that's the saving grace. He's made some catches. He's not completely lacking of talent. You know, the reason he's on the roster is because he's 6'4". So, is he going to get on the field? I don't know. James Washington's going to get on the field. I'm not excited about Justin Hunter. If he makes a team, he makes a team. I think it's more, you know, I'd like to have somebody else beat him out.
Right, and really, I mean, you're not going to get excited about Darius Heyward-Bey either, about the prospects of him seeing the field offensively. The only thing that's kept Darius Heyward-Bey in the league is he's, you know, a good locker room guy, coach on the field, yada yada, and he'll run down kicks for you as well too. But I mean, you're not going to. I don't think. Do jumping jacks and holler to the masses because DHV makes the 53 over perhaps a guy like Hunter, right? I mean, you know, Hunter didn't dress for several games last year, you know, for a reason, you know, and special teams being one of them. Now, what are you going to do? I mean, yeah, you think and hope James Washington is going to dress and contribute immediately there. Obviously you're going to have Juju, Antonio Brown. I mean, who's 4 and 5? I guess that plays back into the fact of thinking that, well, you could probably carve out a reason why Eli Rogers can make, you know, should be able to make this 53.
Hey, made it last year against the same guys. I mean, you know,
one of the knocks
James
with
Washington
him
in Martavis Bryant's place, Sammy Coates is gone. You know, it's the same group. You know, it's not like, I mean, James Washington has his spot. It's clear. But Martavis Bryant's gone. So that's the spot he's taking. So there's not a bunch of guys that Eli Rogers is competing against who are high pedigree guys that, you know, weren't around last year. It's the same group. DHB, Hunter, you know, Tucker, blah, blah, blah.
Being able to play in the slot and being able to play in the slot effectively and do some of the things they want you to do, probably two different things. I think if I'm the coaches, I'm looking at Eli Rogers and strikes. The main strikes I have against him is he's not a combative catcher. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he's not, you know.
It's not his gig. He's a small.
It's not his game, and he's not a yak guy. I mean, one of the knocks on Martin, really kind of these are the same knocks on Marcus Wheaton. Marcus Wheaton could kind of stretch the field for you, but he wasn't known as a, you know, he's a good route runner, But he not a combative catcher. And remember, you know, in those final days of Marcus Wheaton, you know, Tom will talk about like to see more yak out of him. And I think the same thing holds true with Marcus Wheaton or with Eli Rogers as well, too. These guys are kind of just guys when it comes to the slot. You know, he caught 48 balls for 594 yards and three touchdowns, you know, a few years ago, but you know, can they get better production than, or should they get better production out of that position? And let's look what they asked. You know, they like those slot guys to be able to block and be a little bit more physical too. And it's just not Eli Rogers' game.
I agree. He's not going to be a physical blocker. The yak thing to me, you don't have a guy who's not elusive as your punt returner. I've watched Eli Rogers in training camp for a bunch of years. I think he is an elusive guy, and I think he can get that yak. You're right, it hasn't happened, but I think he has that skill. I don't think he lacks the skill. So, you know, can he put it all together? We'll see. I don't know who he's going to put it together with.
Yeah, and that's the question now. I mean, look, he hasn't made it back to the Steelers by the time training camp, you know, looks like it's going to, you know, barring something.
Yeah, that's tomorrow.
You know, barring something unforeseen happen here in the next few hours. You know, he's not going to be with this team when they open up training camp. So at that point, you really have to, you know, diminish his chances of being back, barring. Now, if injury happens, you know, away.
I mean, it's got to be an injury early. Look, I'd be surprised if he's sitting on the sidelines, you know, 10 days from now, doesn't have a contract.
All right, what's the whole point we're having about this with Eli Rogers right now? The fact that we're surprised that he's not on the roster right now?
Well, it's the Steelers don't have a lot of wide receiver depth. That's the point.
Yeah,
right?
You could say that. I mean,
what if Juju goes down? I mean, where are they going to find a guy? They don't have, you know, look, Eli Rogers is nice. He's not going to replace Juju. But I mean, they don't have a lot of depth at wide receiver. They better not have many guys get hurt.
Yeah, but how many teams have passed their top three or four, you know?
Well, but that's the point. The Steelers' top three is a second-year guy who's been great and a rookie who hadn't played it down. So it's not, you know. That's not a lot of depth to me. Juju, I'm fine with Juju. No, Juju, I think, is a star. So the Steelers have two stars, and then they got a guy who's never played, and then they got nothing.
Yeah, it still kind of rolls you back to kind of, I mean, are we – let's hope we're not sitting here in week four saying, man, I wish they wouldn't have traded away traded away Martavis for that third-round pick. You know, but, I mean, if they don't get that third-round pick, then they don't get, you know – you could go 18 different directions.
Sure. I mean, you know, they did what they did. So,
you know, with the what if thing and all like that. But look, I mean, plain and simple, they expect James Washington. Here's the funny thing is they were able, they dealt Martavis Bryant, and, you know, props to them. They were able to immediately turn around and get a guy, you know, that they think can replace him immediately. You know, what's funny about Martavis Bryant, you go back to his rookie season, David, he didn't hit the field until what, game 7 or game 8?
Yeah, 7 or 8 for sure. I mean, and there were issues. I mean, there were definitely issues with him. So, and obviously he had the good production, and then, you know, then he had the unbelievable preseason, and then, you know, see ya.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, his second half of his rookie season, you think, man, really got some. It's too bad it took a while for him to get on the field. But boy, once he did, you know, you were starting to really, really get excited about him. And here's the thing, you know, you draft Juju last year, he gets on the field immediately. You draft Washington this year, you expect him to get on the field immediately. Yeah, you are going to be in trouble if one of those guys goes down, but really you could go around 32 teams in a league and say if their top receiver goes down, what does the rest of their wide receiver core, depth chart look like? You know, Justin Hunter at least is experienced, and he's going to stick around most of training or all of training camp just in case. And the same thing with Darius Heyward-Bey, and we'll see.
Right. Those are your insurance policies for sure, and there's obviously a decent chance one of them's on the 53.
Justin Hunter going to make this roster, Dave?
I mean, I think it's this year it's probably either or. I can't see them both this year.
Can you see him keeping six in total because
not with this group, no. But, you know, they'll get one will be on the practice squad, but no, not six on the 53.
Yeah. You know, you kind of look at, and I guess maybe this is a good time to kind of segue here into my final pre-training camp 53-man roster prediction. I kept six. I kept Brown, Juju, and look, it.
Well, Eli's not on, you know, he's not under contract. So, I mean, maybe that changes if he's under contract.
Yeah, and against my own better judgment, I have him keeping six. Brown, Juju, Washington, Tucker, Hayward Bay, and Justin Hunter. Consider me one drinking that Marcus Tucker Kool-Aid. But, you know, all we have to go on him right now is what happened really in that final preseason game last year against the Panthers. But, you know, in previous years, the quote-unquote you know, off-season buzz, if you will, has kind of come to fruition, right? I mean, Mike Hilton last year, and who was it before that? Grimble, maybe. I'm at a loss at maybe a couple of names here, but you know, based on the hype this year, and that's really, or this off-season, that's really all it is. It's going to be disappointing if Marcus Tucker doesn't make it, but you could theoretically, you could say, okay, Dave, you have six wide receivers. That's one too many here. Marcus Tucker ain't going to make it. He lands back on the practice squad again. And then, I mean, how surprising, I guess, now, being as how Eli Rogers is not in Pittsburgh right now, if your final five were Brown, Juju, Washington, Hayward Bay, and Justin Hunter?
I think it'd be disappointing. I mean, it gives you some level of security that you've got, well, in having a complete novice, no other way to put it, in James Washington, that you have two veteran guys that, you know, can be there and can help him and you know, step into the role, and you don't have concerns about knowing the playbook or anything like that. So that's the comfort that they provide. The lack of comfort is that the upside is obviously limited in terms of what they're going to bring you. So, I mean, you know, again, the Marcus Tucker's, you know, it's mini camp, it's OTAs, it's, you know, hard to put a lot in.
I don't know how we got on a 30-minute discussion about Eli Rogers, but about a guy that's not even in camp, but we did. I could take him or leave him at this point, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I'd like to take him, yeah.
On Eli Rogers. All right, let's roll through my 53 real quick, and you tell me the issues that you have with it. Roethlisberger, Landry Jones, Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, absolutely.
Running backs, and really, I think there's some wiggle room possibly here. Obviously, Le'Veon Bell, James Conner, we expect to make it. You know, I have Jalen Samuels, the rookie, making it, but I will not be totally shocked if he does. I think he's got to prove a few things here moving forward in the training camp. He better be able to contribute some on special teams, because if you're going to be a number three running back on the Steelers, you better offer a little something there. But in the same, you know, does Stephon Ridley really offer you much as far as special teams go? Would he have even been in Pittsburgh? You know, if James Conner doesn't.
Another thing to remember here is, you know, we've got new rules on the K. We got, you know, we are as important as special teams are. Let's recognize that the role is just constantly being diminished. So, you know, obviously you don't want to ignore it. You can't ignore it. It's part of the game. You still have things to do. But, you know, now you look at talent is, you know, if you can get on the field and help, that's a big deal. And Stephon Ridley, I thought, did some nice things at the end of last year. I would not dismiss Stephon Ridley for sure.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I just can't advocate either Ridley or Fitzgerald Toussaint sticking around right now, barring an injury. But I mean, obviously, you throw Roosevelt Nixon to this as a fullback, okay? So let's tie these two positions together, running back and fullback. You can't see more than four total being kept. In other words, you can't see Roosevelt Nixon plus four running backs being kept, right?
I cannot. And look, I know you tend to lean toward the young guys on some of these things. You know, I would say, you know, Ridley and Samuels, I call it a toss-up. Obviously, Samuels, he's going to get to the practice squad. Nobody's picking him up. Let's not argue about this. He's going to get through waivers if that's what it comes on Labor Day weekend. and he'll be on the practice squad. So, you know, I'd probably lean 51-49 to Ridley right now.
Okay, you know, Roosevelt Nicks, I'm not going to get an argument out of you there. We already just talked about the wide receivers. I have them keep it six, but I can see that number being five just as easily. Tight ends right now, Jesse James, Vance McDonald, Xavier Grimble. I don't think I'm going to get an argument out of you there. I think the only thing is if injury comes into play there, boy, it sure would be nice to have Vance McDonald on the field for 16 regular season games. But you would agree with those three tight ends, right?
Yep.
Now, offensive linemen, are we going to, is it going to be eight or is it going to be nine? Obviously, Pouncey, DeCastro, Ramon Foster, Marcus Gilbert, Alejandro Villanueva, B.J. Finney, Matt Filer, Chukwuma, Chukes,
Core four,
and I have them keeping nine, David.
If you got six receivers and nine O linemen, where'd you come up short?
I came up short on
tight on the linebackers and on the secondary.
No, I have. I only have four inside linebackers.
Yeah, you got eight linebackers total.
I have nine linebackers total. I have five and four.
Let's keep going.
So you know, the only question is it going to be eight or nine? I mean, I think
who were the last two linemen?
Technically, I guess you could say Matt Filer, and I have Jake Rogers, and Jake Rogers would be the, you know, the night. The question of the night is the biggest one there, I think. I mean, you're not going to keep less than eight. I think nobody would argue that Matt Filer has a great chance of making the roster this year as a, you know, really the new Matt Chris Hubbard, if you will, right? Finney's making it. I think Filer makes it. Chooks is making it. The question is do you need a ninth one to possibly, you know, that can give you some left tackle play?
Hawkins tore his knee up, right?
So he's he's done. He's on IR.
It sounds to me like eight. You know, Rogers, we'll see with those guys, but I would bet eight there.
Yeah. See, I went nine, but I mean, I can easily be persuaded to go eight to defensive linemen. They usually always keep six. And I think the question right now is who's number six. I have, seventh round draft pick, Joshua Frazier out of Alabama.
Over Big Dave. You have LT on the team.
Yeah, I have LT as number five behind Tyson Alulu being number four. So it's Hayward, Tuitt, Hargrave, Tyson Alulu, LT Walton. I have Joshua Frazier. You can make an argument that that Greg Gilmore, the undrafted free agent out of LSU, can give Joshua Frazier all he wants during training camp. That's going to be a very interesting, I think, battle, kind of insignificant battle, if you will, or what we hope really ends up being an insignificant battle, because I mean, how much do we really want Joshua Frazier and or Greg Gilmore playing on defense during the rookie seasons? I think the big thing here is if Daniel McCullers makes his 53 this year, something has gone horribly wrong. In my opinion, there.
I mean, you know, if you want to talk about buzz, there was some buzz about Big Dan out of the, you know, not that I pay any attention to it, but he was certainly getting some comments.
Man, I mean, yikes! I mean, I hope we're not talking about that come 1st of September. Inside linebackers, this is going to be another interesting thing here. You know, John Bostic, Vince Williams, Tyler Matakavich. I think we both agree are locks. Are they going to keep four? Are they going to keep five? Matthew Thomas is a name that we've heard about since being signed as an undrafted free agent out of FSU. A lot of buzz about him. But what's going to happen to LJ Fort? I mean, this is a guy that seemingly got crapped on, if you will, for lack of a better word, once Ryan Shazier.
And
Matakavich. And Matakavich got hurt last season. You know, they chose to go Sean Spence. And, yeah, L.J. Fort played some snaps in sub-package. But, you know, what do they really think about him? At least he did give you something on special teams. So, you know, is this going to be a situation where they keep four and L.J. Fort goes down the highway in lieu of a undrafted rookie free agent? Or are they going to keep five and both Matthew Thomas and LJ Fort make it?
Well, you know,
How much confidence
might be the most interest, the biggest wild card coming into camp.
When you look at this inside linebacker group on paper, Bostic, Vince Williams, Titan Matakavich, Matthew Thomas, and let's say L.J. Fort, what, do you get any warm fuzzies?
Well, I, like I say, Thomas is a big wild card. He's the biggest wild card because obviously he's a talented guy. Nobody wanted to even take a flyer on him. You know, he's talked a nice game, says he can be as good as Shazier, whatever he said. You know, it's the silly quotes. But look, guys should have confidence in their own abilities coming in, you know, competing for a job. We'll see what he has. But to me, he is the biggest wild card. I mean, let's remember, I mean, this is not a character point. Vontaze Burfict was a huge character issue, but there was no doubt that he was talented, but he dropped all the way down to where he did because of all the issues. I mean, there's a reason Thomas is where he is, and character's part of it. Not that he's a bad guy, but character is part of the overall assessment of him. And so does he come in and show that he's a really talented guy? I think that's why, to me, he's the biggest unknown of you know, any of the 90 guys who will be in there.
And the thing is, even if he makes it, I mean, something has to go wrong for him to see any snaps, right? You know, so you're looking at potential upside with him. And then obviously, you know, let's say you only keep four inside linebackers. Good bet all four are going to dress on game days. So, you know, one of the things you want to see with these back end of the roster guys is can they get downfield and make a difference on punt and kick coverage, obviously special teams there. I have them keeping four. I have Thomas making it as the fourth over L.J. Fort. Just like a few other positions in my predictions, my arm can be twisted into, heck, keep five inside linebackers and only keep five wide receivers, right? I mean, you could make an argument to go that way. Outside linebackers, Bud Dupree, T.J. Watt, Anthony Chickalo, you know, Keon Adams is a guy that we haven't seen, but everybody has him making a 53, you know, right now, former seventh-round draft pick out of Western Michigan.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, who else is going to make it behind Dupree, Watt, and Chickalo? I mean,
I know we'll see, but I'm not giving Keon Adams a roster spot based on being a seventh round pick who's done nothing. So somebody is, but I'm not just handing it to him.
You know, and then you have the kid Adenier out of Toledo, Farrington Hugonen, kind of a holdover from the practice squad. You know, former undrafted free agent as well there. You know, Alex has thrown out the idea, you know, if a guy like John Simon ends up losing out on a roster spot with the Colts, is he going to find his way to Pittsburgh just prior to the start of the regular season?
You know, well, by the way, Connor Barwin finally got a job, huh?
Yeah. You have to. I haven't seen that contract, but have to think that's the league minimum. But
I'm
you know, I don't know how do you feel about this group? I mean, I obviously you like the prospects of Watt. I mean, you like Watt.
Yeah, look, I'm still a buyer of Bud Dupree.
How much? You got to be running low on funds if you're a buyer of Bud Dupree.
Now, look, I think Bud, when he came back 2 years ago from injury, was very good. Now he's changed its size. We'll see what happened. Look, Bud's a talented – he's physically talented, so we'll see if he can put it all together. I think Bud is – I am not at the Jarvis Jones point on Bud Dupree, nowhere close. I mean, Jarvis Jones never really gave you hope. You know, you hoped because he was a first-round pick that the Steelers got it right and that he was going to turn the corner, but he never turned the corner. I think we've seen flashes from Bud that are better than anything we saw from Jarvis Jones. Now, we haven't seen kind of the dominant type of play that you'd like out of a guy taken with his draft spot, but I think the talent matches with the pedigree. Jarvis Jones, the talent didn't match with the pedigree. Now we'll see if he can put it together on the field. So that's interesting. Vince Williams is, you know, look, nobody's going to – he's just a guy, right? He's a ideally, Vince Williams would be your 22nd best starting player and have a – he is a useful football player. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying we're talking about a team that potentially wants to go to the Super Bowl. Yeah, you know, hopefully for the Steelers, Vince Williams has a season that's similar to last year, which was fine. It wasn't great. Wasn't terrible. Similar to last year, and he's their worst starting defender, okay, because that's what you're going to have to live with. The other position is, again, a massive question mark. The fact that Matakevich ran you know, the whole mini, you know, OTAs and mini camp or whatever, the fact that he ran with the first team and Bostic ran with the second team, it's not 100% surprising, but it's certainly a little bit surprising, at least, you know, toward the end, splitting reps or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see, literally, you know, not day one in training camp, but day four in training camp, is Matakevich getting all the reps with the first team defense? And that quickly, I really mean it, that quickly, because if that's the case, you know, 4 to 6 days into training camp, if Matakevich is still getting all the first team reps, then it's his job to lose.
Yeah, and it might be that anyway, you know?
Well, right. I mean, that's going to be, to me, the telling sign. You know, if it's a weekend and he's getting it, it's his job to lose. If, you know, 3 days in they're splitting, then, you know, what they did in OTAs and minicamp was just familiarity stuff. Doesn't matter.
I tell you, though, once Bostic was signed, though, I would have bet you good money that the regular season would have opened up with Bostic over Matakevich. So
I'd still bet that. I'll still bet that. But that's why I'm saying, you know, it's going to be interesting because a week into camp, we're going to know who is the, you know, who is at least tapped at that point in time to be the starter, because you don't just waste a week for dress purposes, you know, to make, because he's a rookie and you just don't want him to think that he doesn't have to earn it. You don't do that with a guy who you sign as a veteran free agent coming in. If he hasn't, you know, if he's not taking first team reps 1 week into training camp, then he's the second team guy, you know, in their minds at that point.
Back to outside linebacker. How much do you think this supposed flipping, and especially if it's permanent, helps Dupree?
Well, I think it's permanent. I mean, I think it is permanent. So that's the goal. Now, you know, they can obviously back off it, but I think the idea is this is in ink. They're going to play on that side. I don't think it'll be that big a difference. I just think he has to be better. Now people will say if he's better, they're going to say it's because of that. I'm not a big buyer. Look, I don't think personally there might be the smallest edge of being coming from the blind side, but I just don't think, like, right tackles are so good these days that the difference between right tackle and left tackle isn't that great in the NFL. You can't have a bad right tackle. So you got to be good on both spots. Teams can be right-handed or left-handed in its formation and stuff like that. But look, at the end of the day, you got to beat the guy's ass in front of you. And, you know, you got to do that whichever side you're on. And, you know, as you've pointed out, going through the studies of Bud Sachs in his career, he's gotten some freebies. They still count. You got to get the free ones because, you know, we've seen Steelers miss some free ones. But, you know, he's got to show that he can beat guys. And, you know, it's going to be a challenge for him.
Here's the thing about him too, but believe it or not, I mean, the last two preseasons or last two training camps / preseasons, he's had problems, you know, getting on the field there. So more than anything, man, it'd be nice to see him make it through a training camp, and preseason and be up to speed and ready to go, you know, by week one. He just has not been able to do that the last couple of seasons. So that's something, kind of a story inside the story, I think, to kind of watch with him. Can he make it through 80% of the training camp practices and play his expected share of snaps during the preseason on top of it? So, yeah, look, I mean, there's no reason to have a lot of confidence outside of T.J. Watt and his group. I mean, Anthony Chiclo, you know, we hear his name every training camp. Boy, having a great camp. And then, you know, and then we go from there. Keon Adams hasn't played a snap in the NFL regular season. Denier, you know, we'll see. All right, cornerbacks. I have them keeping five. Artie Burns, Joe Hayden, Mike Hilton, Cameron Sutton, and Brian Allen. I have Cody Sensabaugh, barring injury, being gone.
Yeah. Look, I think it's Sensabaugh or Brian Allen. We'll see what happens. You know, again, you know, it's tantalizing to talk about guys who, you know, who you don't see because they drafted him and it's all on potential, right? Guys who have played in the league and not had great success or just been kind of backup guys like Sensabaugh. You say, okay, well, the upside's not there for that guy. Let's hope the other guy's better. So, you know, that's the mindset, I know, for, you know, people wanting to see Brian Allen or Keon Adams or, you know, whomever it is. You know, we'll see what Brian Allen does. So, that simple. I mean,
let's be honest. We still don't know a lot about Brian Allen outside of special teams play.
No, so I say we don't know anything. Let's see. That's what I say. Let's see what Brian Allen does. It's all potential at this point.
You know, you would like to see this guy really make an impact, you know, being during preseason where he's going to get a lot of time. You'd really like to see, you know, some noticeable growth and development with this guy, and head and shoulders, you know, above, you know, guys like Cody Sensabaugh and these other, you know, younger undrafted free agents and futures guy on the rush. You hope that it's very noticeable, and that's what you're looking for there. I have him keeping the five cornerbacks there. I have him keeping five safeties also. Morgan Burnett, Sean Davis, Nat Burry, Terrell Edmonds, and Marcus Allen. Of course, Edmonds and Marcus Allen are draft picks. Nat Burry signed during the offseason, more of a special teams demon who supposedly, you know, should be able to give you some, you know, emergency snaps at strong or free safety there. You know, Burnett, Davis, obviously the starters. You know, you could make an argument that maybe a guy like Marcus Allen doesn't make it. You know, maybe he goes to the practice squad, and maybe you keep one extra corner. But I think I'll be surprised if they don't keep a total of 10 defensive backs, and I have it split right down the middle, 5 and 5.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, look, you got some guys there. Sutton, certainly you can, you know, you can look at a couple of these guys as being versatile guys. And when you think about inside linebackers and the same thing, you know, we talk about how the Steelers are going to scheme it. Are they going to, you know, walk guys down in the box? So position versatility, just being able to play different spots on the field and kind of being asked to do different things, whether it's run with guys, cover space, do different things, you know, certainly tackle, those skill sets are going to matter. And so, I think on the secondary, you know, you have guys who are specifically going to be guys already in Joe Hayden. You know exactly what they're going to be. But you have some other guys who can do some different things. And again, it'll be, you know, we talk about the schemes and what they're going to do and how they're going to do things. And not that OTAs and minicamps should be a complete guide, but things weren't all that different. It sounds like we'll see if the reality when they get to camp and start lining up on the field, how they do line up.
And I know you're not going to disagree with any of my specialists, Chris Boswell, Jordan Berry, and Cameron Canaday there. Now, here's the thing. Yeah, I like to think that my 53-man roster prediction looks great on paper, but I'm 99.999% sure that these 53 players I have listed are not going to be the 53 that the team takes to Cleveland. So where are my likeliest holes?
Well, you know, I think there's question marks at the linebacker position. I mean, those are where there's serious question marks. There's question marks at wide receiver, and then I think there's a question mark at the third running back spot. So I think those are the things I would circle. I think the rest of it's really straightforward. I mean, whether it's Cody Sensabaugh or Brian Allen, whether it's the seventh round kid from Alabama or Dan McCullers, who the eighth and ninth practice squad offensive lineman is. I mean, look, again, I would have ignored Mike Hilton last year. You know, we even had a conversation about him. Those things don't happen every year. They happen every couple of years, maybe, that a guy really comes out of the woodwork and makes the team. And you hope they do, and are as impressive as Hilton, who was fantastic. I mean, arguably the Steelers' best performing defensive player, certainly versus expectations, the Steelers' best performing defensive player. So you hope you find one of those, because that's kind of a freebie, the diamond in the rough thing. But you can write, barring injury, I think you can write down 47 names in ink for the Steelers roster. And then, as always, you probably have 15 guys competing for 6 spots. And the 15 guys might come from, you know, 7 different positions, depending on how things match up and the importance of special teams and how the Steelers view kind of the change and how, you know, what the role is of kickoffs this year and how they plan to manage some of that stuff. So, you know, all that stuff is in there. But I think you can probably put down, you know, as I say, 46 names probably in ink, and then 6 or 7 spots, you know, you're battling over.
Here's something I wrote about yesterday evening. You know, 3 out of the last 4 years, a rookie undrafted free agent originally signed by the Steelers has not made the initial 53-man roster. Tyler Murphy, and who would have bet Tyler Murphy when he was signed out of Boston?
BC. Yep.
Out of Boston.
Receiver, yeah.
Well, yeah, he played, you know, quarterback his one season at Boston College. Who would have bet that he would have been the one to make the initial 53? As the team's, you know, as an undrafted free agent, 3 out of the 4, you know, out of the last 4 seasons. That's you know, you look back over Steelers history, you know, even going back before Mike Tomlin, you know, they've got a rich history of some nice names, you know, of undrafted free agents making making, you know, at least an initial 53-man roster. We haven't seen that happen three out of the last 4 years. Now, whether it be injury, whatever, yada, 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 quality of undrafted classes. I mean, arguably, you look at this year's, and we'll see how it turns out. A couple of these guys could be gone by the time we talk, two weeks from now. But you look at this undrafted class on paper, it looks to be one of their better ones. And, you know, we talked about a guy like Matthew Thomas, you know, Greg Gilmore out of LSU is another guy. You've already mentioned his name, Quadre, which I think a little bit overrated. But, you know, you could make...
Well, overrated in what respect? I mean, this guy's an undrafted free agent, so he's not rated. I mean, you know, he was an All-American, led the country with, you know, returns for a touchdown 2 years ago, I think.
I mean, I don't give him near the chance that some give him at making the 53, maybe. Okay.
Yep.
You got some.
I don't think any of these fringe guys aren't really rated. I mean, there's some buzz about, you know, it's like, is Marcus Tucker overrated? He's not rated at all. Some people are talking about him, but I mean, these guys are just guys. They haven't done anything. So, I mean, that is the one thing I give Mike Tomlin credit for. When you ask him during the season about the practice squad guys, he's like, we're not talking about them. They haven't done anything. It's not worth talking about. I'm not going to give these guys any buzz when they haven't done anything. This is their chance, starting tomorrow, the chance to make some buzz, make some things happen, and get talked about and see if they can get there. But right now, it's just, you know, they're just guys.
All right, I wrote up 11 storylines to watch when the Steelers open up training camp. We've hit on quite a few of these already. The Dirty Red starter watch, if you will. What's going to happen there between Bostic and Tyler Matakavich there? That's going to be interesting to watch progress as far as who's getting what reps early on in training camp. Another topic we've already hit on, the Tucker hype train. You know, is Marcus Tucker for real? Is this a guy that deserves the hype? This is a guy that you would expect to make an impact, you know, right from the get-go, from training camp practices right on into the preseason. Another kind of storyline we've hit on are the young running backs. Le'Veon Bell obviously not going to be there this summer once again. I really look forward to seeing a lot of James Conner and Jalen Samuels during these early preseason games. We already know who Stevon Ridley is. We already know who Fitzgerald Toussaint is. Show us these young guys. Show us Conner. Show us Samuels. Show us Javarian Franklin, the kid out of Western Michigan there as well. Another prime training camp story. Look, James Washington. I feel I know a lot about this kid, but, you know, high expectations, you know, expectations of him hitting this field immediately. I think one of the things that stuck out to me about watching his college tape, David, is how he primarily played probably 98% of his snaps on the right side of the formation. There. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how much they put on his plate. Look, we know he can combat catch. We know he can get down the field and make these deep catches. We know that he can run the route tree. What can he do outside of that? Well, are they going to move him around some of these other positions? Are we going to see him be able to progress on the other side of the line of scrimmage there? We already talked about another one, the flip-flopping, if you will, about the outside linebackers with Watt and Dupree. Chris Boswell. You know, is he going to have a contract extension by the time the start of the regular season? One would think that he would. So, you know, that's something to watch. Another topic we've kind of minor hit on, the priority undrafted free agent watch. Greg Gilmore, Adeniyi, Patrick Morris out of TCU, and then obviously the linebacker Matthew Thomas out of FSU. Throw in Quadre out of Pitt into that group if you want to. This is a group of undrafted free agents that we expect to hear some noise out of. Another one is another topic you and I touched on briefly. Keying in on Keon Adams. This is a guy that 7th-round draft pick. He missed his rookie season with a shoulder injury. Can he make an immediate impact as a depth outside linebacker guy? The swinging tackle position, is it Chooks? Is it going to be Chooks? Is that a slam dunk now that Gerald Hawkins has been lost for the season? And will they keep a possible 9th offensive linemen. And really the last one I wrote about, Rudy. You know, what's Mason Rudolph going to do? You know, we know who Landry Jones is. We don't need to see Landry that much during the preseason, if you ask me. I want to see a lot of Rudolph. I want to see a lot of Joshua Dobbs. I want to see a lot of things that I saw out of Rudolph during, you know, his three plus years at Oklahoma State carry over into some training camp practices and more importantly into some preseason practices there. Anything else you'd like to add into kind of storylines?
Well, I think the one just a general concept one is that the kickoff thing to see how the Steelers. You know, there's going to be a lot of different – not every team is going to pursue this the same way. And it's going to be interesting to watch because I think there potentially is a lot of tactical things that can be done with this new rule. And we've not seen it instituted, and we'll see what teams do. But it'll be interesting to watch how they practice it with – you know, remember, all the guys running down kind of the same way as if on a punt return. And, you know, a lot of teams will just conventionally just kind of try to kick it deep or kick it down to the goal line, which I think I've been advocating for years, which we've seen the Patriots do. But we'll see if teams try to, you know, angle kicks and try to see if they can get kicks to bounce and do different things like that. Look, that's not going to be entirely visible, you know, during training camp. But we'll see if they, you know, what will be visible during training camp is if they show some different looks and try to do some different things, both offensively and defensively. So conceptually, that's one thing. The other thing in terms of the big point is it'll be interesting to see at training camp if there is some emphasis on, you know, not putting your head down, you know, in the hole and keeping your head up and doing things the right way. And as, you know, as we get into the season, certainly it'll be interesting to see how the league calls that because that potentially has some that could be a game changing type of concept depending on how the NFL plans to implement that. So just bigger picture concepts. Those will be two things to watch.
Okay, ESPN Mike Sando, they released the insider story this morning on the ranking the tiers of the quarterbacks. Sando's been doing this for a few years now where he gets supposedly some insiders consistent of general managers, coordinators, front office guys along those lines. Takes a poll and then based on the poll results, you know, puts these guys into tiers. Ben Roethlisberger finished fourth overall in this and the fourth and final quarterback in tier one. Ranked ahead of them are Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Drew Brees. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I think I went through that list kind of rather quickly and – you know, in the past, I've looked and said, you know, this guy's seven spots off or this guy's probably in the wrong tier. I think it was incredibly spot on. I went through closely through the first 10 or 12, the first two tiers. I didn't have any problem with any of it. I was a little surprised Cousins was the first guy in the third tier. Just going off memory, I might have put him at the bottom of the second tier. But, I mean, that's nitpicking stuff. I mean, I thought they got this thing perfectly right.
Tier two.
Rip them off. Just rip off the names.
Matt Ryan, Russell Wilson, Matthew Stafford, Philip Rivers, Carson Wentz, Andrew Luck, Cam Newton, Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm still bullish on Jimmy Garoppolo this year. Deshaun Watson. And then tier three, yeah.
So that's interesting. You know, Garoppolo's had seven starts. Watson's had, you know, four or five. I mean, those guys, they people think enough. You know, this isn't Sando's list. This is NFL executives' list. They think they saw enough of these two guys to put them in tier two. I thought that was interesting. And, I agree.
Tier three, Kirk Cousins, Alex Smith, Eli Manning, Dak Prescott, Jared Goff, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Andy Dalton, Joe Flacco, Case Keenum, Tyrod Taylor, Blake Bortles, Ryan Tannehill, Sam Bradford, and then you get into tier four after that.
By the way, and I love that list, and I love the order of that list. I thought tier three was, you know, I might have ordered it exactly the same way. The only thing is I'm a little higher on Bradford. I know he's where he is because of injury stuff. He's the bottom of that list. If he's healthy, I'd move him up if you knew he was going to be healthy.
Tier 4, Mitchell Trubisky, Josh McCown, Patrick Mahomes, A.J. McCarron. That's your 32.
Yeah, and those guys are all there because they didn't play. I mean, obviously McCown's played. I thought McCown did a hell of a job for the Jets last year. So anyway, so that's a good list. I think it's a fun list. None of the rookies are on there, obviously, but I thought they did a really good job.
Okay, what else do we have here?
Let's close it up. I got a meeting I got to go to, and we got camp open tomorrow, so I think we covered a fair bit here for 70 minutes.
All right, we'll kick off. What do you think about Josh Gordon missing a start of camp? No big deal.
I never like to hear that somebody's got mental health or anxiety issues. I hope it's not serious because that's a big deal. But, hopefully – look, I want to see him on the field. He's a great player. He's obviously had a troubled couple of years.
All right. We will begin Season 9.
Season 9. We're putting a bow on Season 8, Dave. Can you believe it? 8 years of the Terrible Podcast.
No, I can't believe it. Someone asked recently if we'll tell the story about how that all came together. So maybe we'll open up the Friday show talking a little bit about that and all. But in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do, want to donate to the cause, help us kick off Season 9 correctly, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. And until Friday.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.